Typical professionalism, I missed the visitor at Sundance, and I finally saw it last night. I think there's unquestionably easily one of the best films I've seen this year so far. And I just wanted to tell you, I really feel quite moved, and quite I feel quite strongly about the whole thing. It was an excellent job. I liked it better than Station Agent, congratulations. It was a good job.
Well, thanks a lot. It means a lot. I read your blog a lot and your website, and appreciate that very much.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I thought that the performance by the mom, whose name is Dan, is it that Dene? Am I getting the name right?
No, the mom is Hiam.
Oh, sorry.
Mom is Hiam Abbas, and then Tarek's girlfriend is Danai.
Got it. Sorry, Hiam Abbas. Well, she is beautiful.
Yeah.
What a beautiful performance.
She's amazing, right? Now, I have to say, I sort of, you know, much has been made of me writing a role for Richard, because I did. I really wrote the role with Richard in mind, and but I have to say, I did the same thing with Hiam. I was, I saw her in a bunch of movies coming out of the Middle East, and the first movie I saw was this tiny movie called Satin Rouge.
Okay.
It's a French name, and I just loved her. I was like, oh my God, she's just like, I just fell in love with her. And
yeah.
I saw her in like Syrian Bride and Paradise Now, and I just felt like I went to Paris to write for about a month just to get out of New York City.
Uh-huh.
And I did it in large parts. I know she was living there, and I just wanted to meet her and have a couple conversations with her before I wrote the part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And after like the first lunch, she's just super cool, like great conversation, totally collaborative. And you know, when I'm writing for something for someone, I never, being an actor, I never like to say, hey, I'm going to put you in my movie, but I just said, hey, I'm trying to do this. If it would work, I'd love you to be in it. She's like, great, let's talk.
Yeah.
So she was very cool from the beginning.
Yeah. Where do you, by the way, when you go to Paris, where do you like to stay? What's your favorite part of town?
Well, my cinematographer, his family has an apartment there, and then on the fifth floor, they own this little guest apartment that is like literally about 250 square feet.
Uh-huh.
And it's always open, so when I go there, I stay there. It's literally, you walk in, there's like a bed, a mini kitchen, and then like two huge windows. It's the French term for it is chambre de bonne, which is basically like attic room.
Okay.
It has a long history in Paris for cheap quarters for like artists, but it's adorable and free, so that's why I stay there.
All right. Wonderful. Okay. Well, for those who have not seen The Visitor is actually only going to be opening in very few theaters on Friday. I think it's New York and Los Angeles. And is that it for this Friday?
Yeah, it's actually kind of your typical, you know, platform release movie this size, you know, to kind of build the word of mouth. But then, you know, to Overture's credit, we open a week later on the 18th in like seven or eight more cities. So you know, based on the reaction, I think, of people, they have a pretty aggressive, like, getting it out there plan, because we have been so, you know, the press has been so good up to this point, and just traveling with the movie. You know, I've now been in like eight or nine cities with the movie doing public screenings, and you just get a sense when the audience is digging it. You know, we had that at Sundance. We had an amazing screening, our premiere at Sundance, and you know, you just know when an audience sticks around afterwards and everyone stays for the Q&A and stuff, you know, like you're doing something right, you know.
Right.
So I think Overture is expanding it pretty quickly after we open in New York and L.A.
If it could be said to be a genre of film, which is basically the film that is about a spiritual and an emotional awakening on the part of a character who clearly needs something like that at the beginning. And one of the first ones of this type that I remember really enjoying, and I got kind of a similar vibe from, was Bill Forsyth's Local Hero in '82. Do you remember that one with Peter Riegert?
I'll take that comparison any day of the week. That's an amazing movie.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing more kind of the same thing. Obviously, you're weaving in the very current and very disturbing immigration and INS situation. But, you know, it's kind of the same idea, right?
Yeah, I know.
Fair to say?
I believe me. I mean, I would, like I said, I said it sort of glibly, but it's an amazing movie. And I think it has sort of these human comedies. It's like they're dramas, but with comedy. So it's like a human comedy. It's a term I heard once, which I really liked, which I think explores character as much as anything. And you know, it's interesting because when I started this 3 years ago, immigration, it's always been important, but it wasn't like it is now. You know,
mm-hmm.
so I think that probably was an advantage because I really just stumbled upon it well into the writing, well into like starting the idea for the script.
Right.
And then thought, oh, I cannot avoid this. It's like I have to include it. It would be sort of irresponsible. And so I weaved it in as like a storyline sort of, you know, and I think that's why it's not, doesn't feel like a, you know, like a mission film or a topic film, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. The first reaction one has is naturally, I'm sure you heard this up and down, but basically that Richard Jenkins is very well known to most anyone that has any kind of appreciation for the better indie films, and I'll never forget his hilarious performance as the FBI agent who has slipped LSD in the in that scene in Flirting with Disaster. And I've loved him in so many different things, but you had to have heard, I'm sure, from people before you made this. Do you think that he's got the charisma, the you know, kind of the star power to bring people in to see it in the first place? And your answer was what?
Only if we do it really well. You know, I think most people that I talk to, look, I ran up by friends of mine, you know, shrewd people who are make movies and write movies and direct movies, and said, what do you think? And they're like, look, everyone unanimously was like, if you can get the money, regardless of how much it is, make it with them, because the guy is so good, it'll be such a wonderful discovery.
Yeah.
And people really like him, and they're like, just, you know, don't write the movie, don't write yourself out of the movie, you know what
yeah.
I mean? And
yeah.
Meaning don't write a $30 million script when you don't need it, and I knew I didn't need it, so
mm-hmm.
that's all I could go by. And it's funny, because, you know, doing press right now, David, it's like I go around, it's so many times I've heard, you gotta admit, it's kind of a brave choice to cast Richard Jenkins.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, why? And like people are like, don't get me wrong, I love him. And I'm like, and everyone says that. So It might have been maybe not brave, but just a little bit insightful in terms of casting some guy who's so beloved, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
People just have their movies for him, and they just, that's why people love character actors so much, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. No, he's a splendid actor. I mean, I just I'll be honest. Though, the very first...
I got to be honest. Like, the other part of it was, I knew I had a little bit of capital from the station agent. I knew people would look at my, you know, look at this script, which is similar in tone in some ways, and know what I did. Like when I made the station agent, none of those guys were that very well known. Patty was the most well known, and certainly no one, not many people knew Pete, but. I think I had a little bit of leeway. I sort of capitalized on that. I knew this was the time to do it. And so,
right.
You know, but I must say, I never for an instant worried about the aesthetic, worried about, like, Richard carrying it off. I knew as a director, as an actor, mm-hmm. he was the right guy for the role,
right.
You know?
Right. Well, it's basically, if I were to describe it for those who have not seen the film, it's essentially about a very conservative-mannered and emotionally buttoned-down college professor from a school in Connecticut, which I took to be, I imagined it was Storrs or something, UConn at Storrs, wherever, I don't know, where.
We actually have it labeled as Connecticut College pretty subtly because we dressed it because it wasn't, but we dressed it as Connecticut College, which was, there's some banners and some bugs and stuff. Same idea.
Yeah. And it's basically he's down in New York to read a paper that he hasn't actually even co-authored, but he's there kind of under duress, and he happens upon a young couple that has been illegally subletting his apartment, unbeknownst to them that it was illegal, but they just happened to be staying there, and he asks them to leave initially. But his humanity comes out when he realizes that they have no place to go, and so he asks them if they want to come back and stay for a couple of days, and it gradually turns into a very sweet and very very likable relationship between the three of them, and then it goes on from there. Then eventually the mother of the young man, who is a gifted what's the kind of drum that he plays? It's not bongos.
A djembe, djembe. It's an African drum.
Yeah. He's very gifted, and there's some wonderful sort of spiritually coming alive scenes where the two of them where Richard Jenkins is taught how to play it, and he gets rather good at it. And I was told, by the way, by our Pete Hammond, who did an interview with one of them last night, that actually Jenkins was better.
Hold on, you cut out there for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Pete Hammond.
He said that Jenkins actually was better on the drums than Haas was.
Sorry.
Can't hear me, huh?
I don't know if you're still on the phone, but I'm
still here, but you can call me back if you want. You can hear me now? I'm just using the speaker so I can record. I can cut this out when I edit it. But all right. He said that he asked Haas, is that how you pronounce it? Haas, the young man? Can you hear me again?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Is that how you pronounce his first name? Is H-A-A-Z? Is it Haas? Is that how you say it?
Haas, right.
Haas said that actually Richard Jenkins was better on the drums than he was in actuality.
Yeah, Richard played drums like as a teenager for like 4 or 5 years, so he had a pretty good sense of rhythm. And Haas, we had to put in like djembe boot camp for like 6-7 weeks.
Okay. Anyway.
It was hilarious. I'd get these calls from him, like these earnest calls. He's such, what you see on the screen is what he is. Like, you can't act that stuff, you know. He's just like the guy's an open book and really lovely, and he's just sort of like, right. I'm really trying. I don't know how good I am, but my hands hurt.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Now, I was kind of wondering, when Richard Kind first came in, I thought, here's a character, and I thought he might get woven in again in some way, shape, or form, but he doesn't return. Did he get cut out, or did you just, or he was just
one other
there?
Small scene. He had one other small scene that we didn't need, and like I was going to have him keep popping up, but then the movie just started to pick up pace in the second half, and just felt it unnecessary, and
right.
You know, Richard's a dear friend, and he, in both movies, has come on and taking, you know, largely expositional roles and like made them really entertaining and engaging, and it's, as a director and a writer, it's a great thing to kind of cover your tracks with a great actor like that.
Right. Well, it's a. Can you tell me the after Sundance and up till today, Friday's limited opening? Has it shown at other festivals? Had it shown at other festivals this year?
Yeah, we've been doing wherever there's a festival in a city that we're going to release in.
Yeah.
I think Overture intelligently has been placing us. So we went to like Miami. We went to Dallas.
Yeah.
Went to Phoenix,
right.
And it's really just South by Southwest, and we really just enter these festivals to build the groundswell and see how the public's been reacting. But I've been at most of them, and it's been really exciting.
Right. Now it's funny. I seem to recall reading, maybe it was in context of this film, but I recall reading something in the New York Times or somewhere recently about the whole immigration situation, about how it's so oppressively. One note as far as the Bush administration is concerned, the post 9/11 atmosphere is just utterly, they're just interested in getting rid of as many people as possible. That just seems to be the bureaucratic drift of things. Is this something that, I won't ask you, but I swear I just read about this, and I read so many things that I can't put my finger on what it was, but. I was recently. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was still listening.
Well, I was going to say I just recently started to think about this issue, and seeing the film kind of kicked it in for me. It was the only thing that stopped me to be the only thing that gave me pause about this whole thing was that I wondered about the ability of a guy who's a musician in a jazz group and his girlfriend who sells trinkets on the street for 35, 40, 50 bucks a pop to be able to afford a sublet in the West Village. That was my only stop.
You must have lived in New York at some point.
Well, I'm going to go back there, and I've got a friend who lives in Brooklyn, and he's got a place he's letting me stay in, but I was just looking at sublets, simply a one-week sublet where someone is out of town, or even a room sublet, because I don't really need a lot of space. I was just looking for half an apartment. And the pirate atmosphere back there is it's astonishing. I mean, people are getting $800, $900, $1,000 a week for a half of an apartment, you know? It's really.
I think part of that was I actually read this. I have to track this down. Not a lot. Once in a while, someone who's a real New Yorker and spent time there brings it up.
Yeah.
And you know, part of that came out of an article I read about like squatters and apartment scams, but around the country, and it was like all these tales of like different people falling into different thing, and one was like this young couple renting a place that they thought was too good to be true, and it turns out it was that they paid like their first security deposit in first month to second month rent, then found out that like the couple, it was like an older couple who, you know, similar kind of thing. I remember reading that, just like, that is awesome. That is like the funniest convention I've ever read.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, that's what kind of happened. This guy's like, and I think Zaynab probably was shrewd enough to catch on to it. She even alludes to it when she's angry. And I think Tarek is like, in an effort to make it all work, thinks he stumbled on this great thing, paid the guy up front a couple months, and that, you know, Walter was there, you know, shortly after. So I think that's what happened. They moved in, and plus, you know, the place looks okay, but I think Walter's always hasn't really touched it, and they cleaned it up. And so a lot of this is stuff, even my production designer and I went through and through and through. Like, it's when I rely on people to kind of give input on the script. Mm-hmm. And he was like, how do we justify this in steps? And we kind of did all the backstory towards it. So it's one of those things that, it's funny because I must say with all the screenings, there are very few people who bring that up. It's like the occasional New Yorker who's in the apartment it's like someone that's had a recent, you know, run-in with real estate. But it sort of reminds me of, I remember when I made The Station Agent, I swear I thought more people were going to call me on this guy moving into the depot, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, people just, I think because it's totally consistent, people just go with it, you know? They're like, okay, you moved in. You know, and so I thought that was sort of a funny comparison in some way.
So it's funny, you the movie does get around in the last third to making real and dramatizing a very moving and touching relationship between a couple of older folks, Richard Jenkins and Hyam, the idea that Sidney Pollack once has talked about quite a lot, which is that the relationships that don't have the kiss at the end and the, you know, the robust happy ending, but the ones that almost work, or that you really want to work, but for whatever reason, life intrudes and things don't quite work out as well as you'd want them to, those are the ones that seem to really get you. Do you agree with that? A general philosophy about
I do. I mean, I do. Who said that? Was it Sidney Lumet?
Sidney Pollack. He says that whenever they, you know, doesn't quite work out is what seems to sink into people more than the happy ending with a kiss and everything.
Yeah, look, we've done, now with all these screenings, Richard and I laugh because they're inevitably in every public screening or festival screening, people just want to know. They're like, does he reach out to her again? Does he go to Syria? Do they need, you know, Peter Travers hosted this screening the other night in Morristown, and this one woman would not let it go. It was like, it was a soap opera, you know, like she's like, need to know what happened the next day. And we've had that a lot, and specifically with that relationship. I think people are just really invested in them and just see maybe what is a more profound and deeper connection between those two. And it's such a credit to those two actors.
Yeah.
And they were like, so much. My editor said, he's like, they're just like edit gold, you know.
Yeah.
You'll see, I let a lot of their scenes play out in a two-shot. And one, I like that style, and two, they could handle it. They had the rhythm and the connection, and they understood it, you know. So it was kind of whenever we could, we let them play out, you know.
The way I took it, the movie has one of the most beautiful endings in a long time, and very, very movingly done, but not trying too hard. It's just perfect. And the way I took it is that Richard Jenkins' character certainly has it in him. If he wanted to, to try and find her or, you know, connect with her again. I mean, he's not in the box like he is in the beginning, and he's got he's got the current running in him at the end. So I felt kind of comfortable that if he wanted to go there, it was certainly within him. That's the way I took it.
Yeah, you know, I would tend to agree. I think that's why the ending, for a lot of people, weirdly enough, with all the sort of tragic elements of the ending, find a real hopefulness in this movie. And that hopefulness is the human condition and the heart, I think, and the connections that are forged.
Right.
And I think it leads one to believe that there is life after this. And if, for instance, if he can go down and play in the subway, he can do just about anything.
Yeah.
And I would tend to agree that, like, you know, he's doing this one sort of ode or some sort of ode to his lost friend is a sort of sign, if anything. One, if there is some rage involved, but I think there's also a commitment to something deeper. And I think, for me, that's what that meant. And that's the ending I always saw for the movie. And I think when I saw it in the edit room the first time, actually my editor called. He's like, oh, it's a good one. So
yeah.
I think we always felt pretty good about that, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tom, are you going to be...
Sorry to interrupt you. For some reason, the word conviction comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
The man now with a very special conviction that he didn't have at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
He probably had at some point earlier in his life, you know?
Right. Yeah. Hey, where was that apartment, by the way? Am I right about it being on West 10th or something? It looked like it was somewhere in the West Village. Or was it on Terry?
I used to live on West 10th.
Uh-huh.
But the apartment is on East 7th between 2nd and 1st and 2nd.
Oh, that's a nice neighborhood. Yeah, that's very nice.
We did kind of kept it in touch. I mean, truthfully, we walked into that apartment, man, an old couple, and don't print this because I wouldn't want her name was feeling, but an old couple had been renting it, and it didn't look quite that nice. It was one big box. And,
okay.
And, you know, a lot of those apartments have been in families for years, and they're rent stabilized, and that's how they can live there.
Sure.
That's what justified the fact that Walter had it. I think him and his wife, we figured, moved in the late 70s.
Yeah.
You know, when they were both down in New York, and that's how they could hold on to that place. But, you know, we had to put in some, you know, dress it a little bit just to give it some more dimension and make it feel a little bit older. But, that neighborhood is obvious, as you well know, changed dramatically. Mm. Where are you from? Are you a New York guy?
Am I a New Yorker?
You live in New York?
No, I live in West Hollywood, but I lived in New York, and I often go there. I just love the whole thing.
Cool. You know. I thought you were in Los Angeles, but then the way you're talking about it, you sound like a New Yorker.
Oh, I've just been there a lot, and my kids are back east, and I kind of wish I could live there at least more often than I do. One of the nice things about doing a column like this is that you're pretty well connected. I'm just as connected there as I am here, so. It's a very convenient thing. So, Tom, I love your performances also, your acting. Are you doing any acting coming up soon? Or are you going to just work on the next film? What's your...
Unfortunately, to my personal life right now, I am. I'm acting in Tony Gilroy's new movie, Duplicity.
Oh, somebody just sent me the script for that. But that's really well written, I hear.
I think it's a great script, and it's got a really good cast, and
right.
I'm really having a lot of fun with it. But it's just like literally, they've been great. They've been working it in, so I go on the road for 5 days, fly home and shoot for 2 days, go out again, and I'm shooting Sunday, and then I go out, and then I come back and shoot for some more time. And so it's been great, though.
So it's still underway as we speak, the shooting, you're saying?
Yeah, it's about halfway through. In May, we go down to the Bahamas.
Okay.
And then we're done after that.
All right. Well, I hope the visitor, really gets recognized. I can't imagine anybody in SAG who sees this who won't want to embrace Richard Jenkins' performance and all the performances. Everybody is so... So I really do hope that the best things happen for it, because it really is one of those special ones. So I was just going to do a wrap-up of the first third of the year, and this is easily one of the top five on my list anyway. So.
Well, thanks a lot, man. It means the world to me to hear that, so I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, enjoy the rest of the train ride, and I'll maybe we'll meet again someday.
Yeah, let me know when you're in New York.
I will.